We are back, everybody. I have missed all of you out there. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest. Head out of the Del Real, still here, still haven't been deported by ICE. And I'm here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who also has not been deported by ICE yet, though he runs less of a likelihood there. But Mr. Hodge is an investor. He's the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. He wears many hats. He does many things. This is the 344th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. It's only been 2 weeks since we've seen you folks, and it has been a bizarre couple of weeks. A lot going on. We're going to talk gold, silver, copper, rates, the dollar, Venezuela. God, where do I start? Let me start by saying I hope everyone had a phenomenal Thanksgiving here in the U.S. Nick, we've chatted, obviously. How are you and your family doing? I hope the holidays were as kind to you as they were to me.
I was going to ask you how your Thanksgiving went, even though I've done so in other channels, and I know yours went well. Mine did also. I went to Texas to visit the in-laws in Houston, got some fishing done in the Galveston Bay. The boy caught his first black drum and a redfish, so checking the fish off the boxes already, and busy as you are with interviews and investments and news, because it's been like, as Doug Casey says, putting the Hoover Dam through a garden hose here after Thanksgiving with all the news releases and stuff. How are you all?
Same. I suspect everybody, hopefully I hope everybody had a phenomenal Thanksgiving. And look, I hope everybody is excited about the end of 2025 and the commencement of 2026 as we are. 2025 has been really kind to our portfolios, and hopefully that's the case for all of you out there as well. But I'm as excited for 2026 as I've been for any year in the 16 years that I've been doing this. And so I know last year when we did our December podcast, we talked about how excited I was for the second half of this year. And fortunately, that played out beautifully, right? New record highs in gold, new record highs in silver, new record highs in copper, lithium bouncing back, putting in a nice bottom and trickling back up slowly but surely with some of the better names out there catching bids and up some 40 and 50%, and some of them making brand new all-time highs. We'll talk about that later. But second half has been great to us. 2026, I suspect we're going to start with a bang. Thoughts on where we are as far as the market goes, Nick, before we get into the
You're always excited, Gerardo, and the optimist, but I'm feeling pretty good myself, and I don't know if I should worry. I don't know if I should worry about that or not, but like you say, it's been a wonderful year for the metals, the resources, the equities, and the news flow and sentiment, which is something we should touch on. As I go blurry there, I'll try to fix that. You know, we've got the news flow from the Trump administration. We've got seemingly the public now realizing what's going on with these critical metals and minerals and the need for them. And now that you have political backing and the positive sentiment from politicians on both sides of the aisle, it could get really fun in short order.
Yeah. No, look, I'm going to shameless plug right away. We have a lot of new listeners this week. So welcome to all of you. For those of you not familiar with the format of this podcast, it's one part me ranting and raving, one part Nick being insightful and witty and factual and logical. We definitely get into markets. We try to make markets and stocks be the dominant focus of the podcast, tilted heavily towards the resource stocks, but we do cover other things. And then there's going to be some social banter that at one point or another, especially for me, is likely to offend some of you. And we do it to say that, you know, I'll speak for myself. I don't care much for either political party. I think we have the stupidest class of politicians I've ever seen on both sides, with very few exceptions. And the very few exceptions, coincidentally, aren't very beloved by the rest of the political establishment on both sides. And I don't think that's a coincidence that the few that I agree with on a lot of things are hated by all the other politicians as well. So never mean to offend, but absolutely going to state it how it is. And excited to have you all on board. Let's get to it. You want to add something, Nick? I know that
I'm just going to say, even your girl MTG is out.
I mean, I'm not even going to start with MTG. I'm not going to start with Peter Hegseth. We'll get to that eventually here. But let's start with gold and silver, and then let's pivot to copper. Let's start with gold and silver. Gold holding 4,200 beautifully. Silver breached 58, kissed 59. Trading right around the 57, 58 level right now. Both look robust to me. Thoughts on those two?
Yeah, I mean, we had a little bit of correction in October and early November. That came as the dollar strengthened up a bit, headed towards 100, which it's now shied away from. Did a nice little consolidation, and then, as you say, gold back up to over 4,200, and looking really healthy with none of the fundamental or even the technical drivers now abating. I mean, you still got the record debt and the central bank buying and the K-shaped recovery and on down the line, and you're likely going to get a rate cut, which is now back up to over like a 0.75% chance for the meeting next week. That could add more fuel to that fire. Near-term support for that yellow metal is an incredible like $4,100, and it could go to like 3,600 and still be in a bull market. On the silver side, you shouldn't be surprised to see it with a six handle sometime in the next 30 to 60 days. It could go to $61 quite easily. Has support down around 53, which again is crazy to say. It has now hit all-time highs, as you said in the intro. That's higher than Hunt Brothers squeeze. That's higher than global financial crisis. Don't give me your inflation-adjusted bullshit.
Yeah, look and enjoy the markets. There's still a lot of value out there. We're going to talk value here later on in the podcast, especially in the premium portion of the podcast, with some companies that are absolutely hitting it out the park, but still present pretty compelling valuations relative to what I think their assets are and will be worth. We have to talk copper. Copper put in one of the most explosive couple of weeks since we've been gone, making new record highs on both, the spot market and in the futures. Thought on copper and where that looks. That chart looks gorgeous to me.
It looks great. I mean, near-term support for copper is now above $5. That's wonderful. What you've got is a flow-through or an extension of what we saw over the summer. You might recall, or maybe you don't if you're new. Like Gerardo said, we got a lot of new listeners and readers, and we're thankful for that. Mr. Trump, put tariffs on metal products back in July, and then someone whispered in his ear that that probably wasn't a good idea. And they quickly backed off. But nonetheless, that created a bifurcated market where copper was rushing into the United States because it was fetching a higher price on the COMEX. We even had problems recently with silver and futures, but maybe we'll
Sure.
talk about that later. And
They
so what,
shut it down.
yeah. And so what happened is copper prices were higher in the US, and it left them with a shortage in the Eastern world, so much that they're now paying negative treatment charges in Asia to get copper that they can refine. And gosh, you could talk about copper for a while, and maybe I will, because you've got supply disruptions that are just going to further exacerbate the structural deficit that everyone sort of knew was coming. You had landslides in Grasberg, you had seismic activity and flooding in Kamoa-Kakula, which is Ivanhoe's asset. And you've got Codelco, guiding down on production. That's the largest producer in the world, the Chilean National Copper Company there. And you got people paying premiums for tons of copper, right? $300, $350 a ton premiums just to get their hands on the metal. And we're not even to that structural deficit, which is supposed to materialize in 2026 and 2027. And at the same time, the drivers are heating up. You hear everything about AI and data centers and electric vehicles. Well, what do you think is the most critical major resource input to building out the grid and
Yeah,
building out
baby.
electric vehicles? I mean, it's copper, right? So, a lot to like. And then at the same time, back to that government support, you've got the federal government singling out and investing in companies like Trilogy and fostering along others with Fast 41 permitting to get assets online. And yet we still know how long that takes to happen. So, again, just like silver and gold, technicals look good for copper, fundamentals look good for copper, and maybe we'll talk about some companies later on that can capitalize on that.
Yeah, no, let's absolutely do it. I do want to touch on the overall indices, despite all the chatter, despite the fact that it's weird times, Nick. We had a record-breaking Black Friday weekend, right, for shoppers, and yet 95% of Black Friday shoppers used credit simultaneously, because it's a bizarro world. U.S. credit rejection rates are the highest since they began tracking them in history. And so, again, I say all that to say that the stock market isn't the real economy, folks. And so when I was much, much younger, I would conflate the two. I would think, well, if the economy is doing not the strongest, then the stock market's not going to do well. completely didn't understand the structure of the market and the way it was set up, right? And so thoughts on the overall indices, I guess is what I'm asking you. Volatility is relatively low. Rates are relatively stable. Bond yields haven't had that spike that they had, you know, 4 to 6 months ago, that was teetering on like really destabilizing some things. And the overall indices, for all the starts and corrections they've had, look pretty solid to me.
Heck yeah. I wrote an entire Foundational Profits November issue about separating that in your mind, right? And you can have empathy and you can sympathize with the bottom half of the K and understand the wealth inequality and the way the economy is set up. But you will not make as much money if you conflate the two, as you just said. There's profit to be made in that separation. And that's understanding that all the algorithms, i.e. the market, cares about is the growth and inflation and the numbers, right? And so you haven't even got third quarter GDP yet. That was delayed because of a government shutdown.
You might not get it. if they look at the numbers and they don't like them, Nick, they just tell you to fuck off and they don't give it to us. That's kind of the administration's way of working these stuff.
They're set to come out on December 23rd. You know, you're going to
hold my breath.
you're set to see plus 3% growth. And that's what you're saying. Like the stock market looks okay. The inflation is still relatively high at 3%. It's going to stay pinned up there, but that's okay when the economy is expanding more than the inflation is, right? And that's what I've been sort of saying. Like the market doesn't care about how many people, you know, put their Christmas shopping on buy now, pay later. The market doesn't care about how many people were in danger of missing out on food stamps. All the market cares about is that 3%+ growth number, right? So you're going to see all-time highs in the stock market. There is still no recession in sight all the way out to sort of the third quarter of 2026, even if, and it likely will, growth consolidates after the first quarter of 2026. It's still going to be positive economic growth. It might be 1% positive, but it's certainly not going to be two quarters of negative growth. And then you're also going to see inflation start to cool off. Oil can't get out of bed. It still's got a 50 handle on it. That's a major input to the inflation number. It's also going to be great for the miners, by the way, who have low cost inputs on oil and diesel and all that sort of stuff. So I get that the market has no breadth, which is what people have been talking about. It's being driven by a handful of tech stocks. And again, the algorithms don't care about that. And just to keep going, like people keep plowing money into it. There's a report out from Vanguard recently about like record inflows into VU, which is, you know, a wide held ETF that tracks the total stock market, sort of like SPY, right? So every 2 weeks, people get paid, they plow money into the market. And that's really, again, what the market cares about. It doesn't care about the wealth inequality. And then one more point on that. Everybody's an investor now. Like
everybody thinks they're an investor.
Right. Hedgeye's been showing a chart for a long time about how it flipped after 2007, where before 2007, hedge funds had more assets under management than ETFs. Yeah. And now with the ETF revolution of the past 15 years, the number of dollars, assets in ETFs now dwarfs what's in the hedge funds, right? And that money just gets plowed into every 2 weeks, like I say. So expect more all-time highs for the NASDAQ and for the S&P, and empathize and sympathize with your fellow man here in this Giving Week. We just passed Giving Tuesday, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say that we've now donated over $60,000 as a company, Digest Publishing, since we formed ourselves just 5 years ago in 2020. We give away 1% of all the net dollars that come through the door. A different employee gets to pick one of those charities every month. And that's looking like it's going to accelerate given what's going on in our own business as well. So we're happy to give back. And just know that if you're an investor, that like Gerardo said, you've got to not conflate the economy with the stock market, because they are two very different things. And I got to say one more thing. Sorry. Did you see the Trump accounts? $1,000. So this is just like more cowbell, right? I posted the meme with Christopher Walken saying that he's got a fever, baby, and the only thing that can cure it is more cowbell. These Trump accounts, which Michael Dell, who is your neighbor down there, and he's putting $6 billion into them himself. I don't know if you read the IRS guidance that came out on it this week, but from 2026 2027, 2028, and maybe not 2029, but anyway, all children born in the U.S. are going to get an account with $1,000 in it that's going to go into what I just described, a broad-based ETF, right? And what do you think that's going to do to the stock market? Yeah. By the way, 3.6 million babies born in the U.S. per year times a couple of years times $1,000 a piece is something like $15 billion. Put it on the tab, baby.
No, look, it's interesting times. Let me not go the Venezuela part of this conversation yet. We'll talk about that here shortly. We have to talk. We talked gold, silver, and copper. We got to touch on uranium because uranium is the one sector, you know, in gold and in copper and in silver, we're seeing the producers, you know, touching new all-time highs, touching 52-week highs, and we're seeing, you know, the developers get love, right? The Perpetuas of the world, right? That formerly Midas Gold that were at $3 or $4 when we started the year, and I was screaming at everybody to buy it, you know, touched $44 here recently, a month or so ago. So we've definitely seen the price appreciation in a lot of those companies, companies that are making discoveries, the exploration companies, they are being rewarded. Uranium still presents the most compelling, uranium and lithium to me, value opportunity right now for the simple fact that most of the names, whether they are producers, near-term producers, developers, or explorers, they've moved higher from the bottom, but they're still off some 35, 40% from 52-week highs. There's a big opportunity in uranium. I can't help but notice that the contract price, the price that utilities pay, which is the one to watch, by the way, folks. I know everybody watches the spot price. It's the least important one of the two. But that contract price keeps inching up, right? At the 86 level last time I saw it. And I suspect it'll be much, much higher in 2026. Thoughts on the uranium sector?
I think it's being overlooked by everything else that's been going on. A lot of attention in silver and gold at record high prices. A lot of attention to critical minerals, yes, but mostly in terms of rare earths and copper. I mean, look at us. How far into it are we? We're 17 minutes in. We're just getting to uranium. So I think it's been overlooked, and that's going to be to the detriment of some and to the benefit of others that use the law and the lack of attention to get positioned. So let me see if I can organize my thoughts real quick. I read an article just today, or maybe it was last night before I was falling asleep, about power prices in Germany and how they are twice that of France. And I thought to myself, what's the difference between how Germans derive their power and how the French derive their power? I wonder who abandoned nuclear power entirely and turned off all their nukes. Is that the country that has rates twice as much as France, which relies 65% on nuclear power? It's a fucking head scratcher, Gerardo. Good fucking Lord. And so what's going to happen is you're going to need to have that build out, not only in Europe, but around the world. We haven't recorded this podcast in a couple of weeks. A lot has transpired. I forget what we've talked about, but Japan has approved the restart of the world's largest reactor. Taiwan is going to bring a reactor back online that's been offline in the next couple of years. The sentiment in the U.S. is particularly now positive for nuclear. I won't run through all the tech stuff that's been happening with the Amazons and the Googles and the Microsofts and the Three Mile Island. By the way, they changed the name of Three Mile Island, like a resource project that turned up dusters. It's not called Three Mile Island anymore. We're calling it something else. I don't remember the name, but look, this for the same reason that the grid is going to need so much copper, the grid is going to need so much uranium. So to put a fine point on it, before I do that, let me tell you about South Korea. So there was another article in Bloomberg yesterday or this morning talking about how the U.S. was going to lend a hand to South Korea to help it produce its refined and enriched uranium. And I was thinking to myself, oh, yeah, like, don't we produce 1 million pounds of uranium and need 50 million pounds? I get that we've made inroads on the enrichment side. I know about Centrus Energy. Believe me, I know all these things. But we're in no position to be, you know, offering help to other people to refine and enrich the uranium when our uranium emperor has no clothes on to begin with, right? Again, we produce 1 million pounds. We need 50 million pounds. You were talking about the contract price, the spot price at $76 a pound or whatever it was yesterday. It's still likely not high enough to incent enough supply to come online. And if you want to build out this grid and turn it back on all these nukes and deploy these SMRs and have nuclear reactors on military bases. By the way, all of that stuff I just said has already been announced. Then you're going to have to mine more uranium domestically, and the price of that is going to have to go up to account for the externalities that other folks don't account for when the uranium is mined in Kazakhstan and Russia and Africa, where we don't internalize the costs of child deaths and emissions and all that sort of stuff, right? So if you want to do that in a clean Western way and feel good about your clean electricity, then uranium is going to have to go to $100 a pound. And at some point, just like people realized it this year with rare earths, some people are going to realize that about uranium.
Yeah, and it's going much higher. Two points that I'd like to make. One, I think underscores the difference between Nick's approach and my approach at times. Ironically enough, we usually think along the same lines on most things, whether it's investments or just politics or just society in general. But while Nick was reading about German electricity rates and, you know, it's about face now once again on nuclear, I was watching the Diddy documentary executive produced by 50 Cent. And I must say, put that asshole underneath the prison, man.
It's on my list.
Put him underneath the prison. It is very, very well done. I'm only on episode 3. But yeah, that kind of gives you an indication as to where our brains go during downtime, if such a thing exists. The second point.
How much does baby oil cost a barrel?
Get me going.
Get the wholesale discount.
Oh God, man. And the second point I was gonna make is this. Look, Nick and I have done, fortunately, very well for ourselves, family members, friends, subscribers, just in general, especially as, you know, last 2 or 3 years. But it's been a good run. We're very thankful for it. We've worked very hard for it. And we've been compensated very well for it. So talking about, you know, past giving and Thanksgiving, something to be thankful there. But we have a uranium company that we are taking. We're leading the entire financing. We're taking the entire financing and offering it to subscribers of Private Placement Intel. That's our accredited private placement service. We only have 100 slots now left on that service. That is not a marketing gimmick. That is not, you know, something meant to get you to rush to be a part of the hunt. Like, do it or don't do it. That's really up to you. Those slots are going to sell in the next couple of weeks. The next deal that we have that we just got done doing due diligence on will likely announce here in the next week to week and a half. It's a uranium company in the U.S. with historic pounds in the ground with a team that we've made quadruple percent gains on in the past, a team that we know very, very well. It's got a $20 to $21 million market cap. It's a new company, and it's basically a group of very, very well-connected executives putting the band back together and having a go at it during what I think is going to be the most historic uranium bull market we've ever seen. So if you're looking for uranium exposure with leverage and torque at a ridiculously cheap valuation, our next deal is going to be absolutely perfect for you. I encourage all of you that are accredited, get one of those slots, man, because you know, if it goes the way that I think it'll go, that thing will be up triple digits in within a few months, if that. And then it's off to the races with them executing the way that they're supposed to execute. So couldn't be more excited to bring that to you in the next week and a half or so. And yeah, get at it, folks.
You'll be seeing plenty about it for sure. I won't spend a lot of time on it. We might devote much of the podcast next week to it. So, yeah, it'll be open here in a week and a half. And like Gerardo said, that subscriber limit has been very intentional. It's been that way since we launched the service several years ago. And it's because once we get to 250 accredited folks, you know, we won't have enough room in the deals for everyone who wants their allocation. We've got folks now that are requesting six figures in every single deal. And if you're only doing $2 and $3 and $4 million financings, there simply isn't enough room at the inn, as they say, as we approach December and nativity and all that. So make sure you get a room at the inn is what I would say. And we'll talk more about it next week.
Well said. I've talked about the brilliance of Secretary Wright in leading our critical metals policy in this country, expediting permitting, fast tracking, with the whole Fast 41 thing, cutting red tape, incentivizing recycling. I could go on. This administration and Secretary Wright has been spot on this not-so-silent war with China and our need to get our critical metals house in order. Kudos there. On the national security front, I think we have one of the most incompetent teams that we've ever had. And it doesn't just extend, you know, to Peter Hegseth, right? Who we all knew wasn't going to be the brightest bulb in the basket, you know, from the get. He inspired initially, I know, from some of my military homies, right? Like one that, by the way, was just promoted to Lieutenant Colonel. I won't say his name because I don't know that he wants me to, but congrats to you, sir. But, you know, initially there was a lot of several of my military friends told me, look, he's coming in. He's doing away with the BS. He's doing away with the DEI. We're finally allowed to lead and teach our, you know, soldiers how to be soldiers, effective soldiers. It's not a hands off policy anymore. And you know, they really rallied around that. And a lot of the last week or two from very high ranking, you know, people I don't know, but very high ranking admirals and past admirals, they're coming out. People that are Republicans, lifelong Republicans, are saying, what in the fuck is Peter Hegseth doing? Right. So while we are bombing fisher boats off the coast of Venezuela and in the Caribbean, and then giving a kill all order is what was reported initially. And Hegseth pounded his chest about that initially. Hell yeah, we killed them all. We don't fight wars that, you know, we don't plan on winning. Then it turned out that they reminded him of the law and the fact that we're not at war and the fact they haven't asked Congress, and that even if they had asked Congress, there's very specific laws. If there are survivors after an initial bombing and they don't pose a threat to you, there's very specific laws about whether you can go back and slaughter those people. Let's forget whether these people were running drugs or not. We still haven't got a recovered kilo, by the way. We still haven't got a recovered firearm. That hasn't happened yet. You could argue that the missiles blew it all up. I'll argue that we've seen cocaine boats, real ones, get blown up in the past, and the cocaine's all over the place. Let's save that for another day. Let's just assume these guys had the most ingenious cocaine running canoe or tiny boat packing set up in the history of little tiny boats, right? And let's just say that they put 11 people on there to make sure that you couldn't see the cocaine. Let me give them all the benefit of the doubt. Even if all that were true, you can't bomb it, see survivors clinging on the side of it, which is now what the administration admits happened, and then give a kill all order. And to Peter Hegseth, I'll say this. I would have at least respected you a little bit more if you didn't throw Admiral Bradley under the bus the way you did. Nick, he told America, us, the taxpaying citizens, he told America that he got up and went to the bathroom when that happened.
His dog ate his homework.
And you said, I want to make clear, Admiral Bradley, address, telephone number, WhatsApp handle, has my full support. But it was him. It wasn't me. I went to the bathroom. It's shameful. It's demoralizing for me as a taxpaying citizen. I am an America First guy. I do want ICE to go get the criminals and the rapists. I would like my tax dollars to clean up the country from all criminals and rapists, and give the proper due process and law and order, which was the theme of the first administration, the first go around under Trump. I want due process. I want our streets cleaned up. I want it safe for your daughters, Nick, for my sons, for ourselves. I want all of that. But everything that I've seen of late, we see that 90% of the people that ICE is targeting have never had a criminal conviction other than potentially being here undocumented illegally. And even then, they're just hitting up U.S. citizens, right? We've seen countless examples of that. And the way that they're doing it, frankly, I don't know that, you know, we're not going to have an incident when you run up on people with the mask, don't identify yourself, and pull out guns to people. That doesn't fly well everywhere, folks. So I wish that my tax dollars were going to ICE actually showing me that 80% of these people had criminal records and we had to get them out. They're not productive citizens. They're not working. They're not whatever. But when all you're doing is showing up to job sites and schools and all of that, I'm not inspired. I wish we were serious about the war on drugs. I've had tragedies. You've had tragedies in your family, Nick, around drugs and the drug trade and you know, everything that comes with that. So when the administration tells me they're doing this because the fentanyl is coming from Venezuela, y'all know that's not true, right? When the administration tells me that this is necessary because Maduro presents a growing threat to American citizens because of the amount of cocaine flowing, and then pardons Juan Orlando Hernandez, former Honduran president, who was convicted by a jury, not a partisan jury. He wasn't convicted by Democrats. He wasn't convicted by Republicans. He was convicted by a jury for bringing in 450, wait for it, not kilos, tons of cocaine. 450 tons, and he gets a full pardon. And and they do this simultaneously. Let me say it nicely because we have some new people. You can't throw dirty water on me and tell me it's raining. Let me just put it that way. And that's exactly, we are being gaslit so badly right now. And unfortunately, people are getting killed. The wrong people are being pardoned. I could go on about the pardon list in the past couple of weeks. You had a guy that was convicted of defrauding people to the tune of $6.7 billion. Not only was he fully pardoned, they went ahead and made sure he didn't have to pay any of the restitution to the people he defrauded. These are people with 401ks and pensions and people whose money he just outright stole. He just got pardoned. Again, I can go out with the pardons. There's a whole heck of a lot of them the last couple of weeks. This is shaping up to be one, and this is saying a lot, one of the most inept, corrupt administrations that I've seen in quite some time. And at the very least, incompetent and hypocritical.
Yeah, that was a heck of a rant. I don't have a lot of ad there. I would have said a lot of the same things. Super hypocritical with the pardoning of Juan Orlando Hernandez, like you just said. He could get an NI 43-101 resource on that fucking cocaine. That's a lot, right? So, and the rule of law is entirely being gaslit and is entirely hypocritical when they tell you that no one is above the law, and then they go ahead and commit war crimes. You said that there's very specific rules. I saw, you know, an expert posting the rules the other day. You know what the example is for not firing on someone after they've been de-armed and don't pose a threat? It's the example cited in the manual is someone who is shipwrecked. It's crazy, man. So, and then just
that's
to throw
the specific example that they teach everyone, folks.
Yeah. And then so to throw, you know, your subordinates like Bradley under the bus, and you know that's what's going to happen. They're going to end up taking the blame, right, for the secretary is, you know, that's not true leadership, right? When you say,
retirement of the other general who was questioning the legality of the strikes weeks before that. They were like, okay, you got to retire now.
Yeah, so no, it's a shit show, man. And so it doesn't foster any confidence in many of the other things that they do. And you know me and slippery slopes and rights and stuff like that. And I'm like you, like, I don't want the drugs in here. I don't want the crime in here as well. But I also don't want my rights or anyone else's rights infringed upon by the government specifically, right? Like I'm pretty staunch libertarian and anti-government in that respect. So when you have someone in the highest office of the defense committing open war crimes blatantly and then scapegoating other folks, like, that doesn't fly well, man. So we need to do some proof, and I hope we get it quick, or hope that something else changes. And hope, unfortunately, is not a strategy, and you know how it goes, Gerardo. But this is a big one, and it's a bad one for sure.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Look, I say I don't like the bulk of the politicians, and I have my issues with certain positions with both Rand Paul and Thomas Massey, but they've been spot on the last, like, 6 to 9 months on most of the issues. And, you know, those are the only two Republicans, coincidentally, that don't get invited to any of the Republican lunches. They don't get to sit at the cool kid table. You know, they have the Trump administration on, in Massey's case, you know, dark money, funneling dark money to the tune of $20 million and in negative attack ads in Kentucky. And they love them so much in Kentucky that Kentuckians are like, no, we don't care. We don't care how much money you put or what you say. We know who he is. Like, he's one of ours, and he actually is one of the Second Amendment guys that is consistent on it. He's one of the small government guys that has been consistent on it. And he's one of the guys, coincidentally, or not so coincidentally, that's calling you guys out for all of this dumb that you guys are doing right now. So kudos to those two on, you know, their takes on the last 4 to 6 months, whether it's for personal gain or not. You know, in Massey's case, especially, he's always been like this. This isn't new to him. In Rand Paul's case, you know, I've had issues with some of, you know, his thoughts and ideas and opinions in the past. But, you know, I have issues with some of my own thoughts and opinions and ideas of the past, if I'm being 100% honest. So par the course, right?
Yeah, for sure. And then you've got, you know, just last word there is, then you got Trump tweeting about the guy's dead wife, right? Which is just a new level of low, even for Mr. Trump. And again, we're issue guys, or at least I think we're issue guys. I won't speak for you, but I can like one thing Trump does, and I can not like another thing Trump does. And attacking a man on social media about his dead wife is a new low, man.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely an issue guy. I found myself agreeing with Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene in 2025 more than I agree with almost any other politician outside of maybe Rand Paul and Thomas Massie. So if you would have told me that the top four politicians I was going to agree with in 2025 were Massie, Paul, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Tucker Carlson isn't a politician, but he's in politics, I would have thought, you've lost your mind or I'm about to lose mine. One of the two. It's a bizarre world, folks. What can I tell you?
I was going to say the same thing. I saw a Bloomberg article recently that was the first line of. It was like, it's a bizarre world out there. And I was like, no fucking shit, man.
Yeah. They should have linked to the podcast. Listen, there is a lot to like, despite my rant. There's a lot to like in the metal space. There's a lot of companies doing some real quality work. I want to get to the premium portion of the podcast because I know we have a lot of good questions that came in. This week as well. So I want to definitely talk some picks, definitely talk subscriber questions. I know you have something to add, Nick.
I was just going to say, maybe we do the questions free before we get to the premium picks so folks can hear how we answer questions and stuff like that. We won't be giving any farms away or anything like that. And then we'll go into the premium portion of the podcast, if that's okay with you.
Let's do it.
There's so much going on, folks, that we had other stuff on the list. I mean, I'm staring at Larry Summers and Epstein, which deserves its whole thing. You know,
we'll get to them next week.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's crazy stuff out there.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's do the questions. And I'm going to rely on you because I know you're more familiar with both of these companies and they happen to be ones that we've dealt with in the past. So maybe I'll share my screen if I need to. But the first question is from Alan G. Thanks for listening, Alan. He wants us to take a look at Defense Metals and the, I think it's pronounced Wichita Project. This is a rare earth development company. It used to be a sponsor of Resource Stock Digest. I know you interviewed Dr. Marina a couple of times.
Yeah, Lisa Moreno. Brilliant.
That's right. She's not the CEO anymore, so I figured you were a little bit familiar with the company. You want to give a take on Defense Metals?
Yeah, no, look, I looked at Defense in the past. I considered it as a pick in the letter at one point. Luisa Moreno was absolutely brilliant. And look, the company has brought in new people, new promoters, a good sound technical team. My issue with the company with Defense Metals was always the amount of shares outstanding and the overhang because of the way... look, the bottom line is they had to operate during a bear market for quite a bit, and it bloated the share structure to the point where, and I must say, I haven't looked at it in the past several months, so maybe they did a rollback. No, they haven't. 400 million shares. So the amount of shares outstanding for a company that isn't yet producing in any significant way on a project that has a lot of merit, especially in this environment, but technically, rare earths are tough, folks, especially the types that they're processing, right? You have the lights and you have the heavies. And of the two, the heavies are the most valuable of the two. But extracting these metals and then separating them, there's a reason why China does 98% of that. It's not easy work, folks. And so once we get to that development stage where it's really relying on a few key technical people and breakthroughs to actually materialize, I tend to shy away the same way that I tend to shy away from, say, a gold company or an exploration company, a metals company, when it's about to start, you know, building a plant to go into production. There's just so many things that can go wrong. I would need a share structure that doesn't have 400 million shares outstanding to allow for mistakes if there were going to be setbacks. So when I look at a team and I like the team and I look at a project and I like the project, but then I look at the share structure, I always ask myself, can they afford a mistake? Can they afford a setback? Can they afford any number of things that can happen, the unexpected black swan? And when you have that many shares out, you really can't. Like, you have to execute on all fronts. And in this case, I just don't have the faith that nothing will go wrong, not because the team isn't capable, because something can go wrong. It typically does, right? And so... yeah, that's the reason I've stayed away from Defense. I will say this, I'll talk our own book. Nick has a couple of what I consider very, very low risk, great rare earth exposure in his a couple of his services that I would look at. One, that is doing phenomenal work with recycling, which is as low risk as it gets, right? If you have the processing end of it figured out and you have the contracts to secure the metals and the magnets, and another one that has uranium and rare earth exposures. So I would recommend most definitely subscribing to a couple of those publications that Nick writes, because there's some really, really good rare earth picks. And Nick, to your credit, you've done phenomenal with those, right?
Appreciate that. No secret, I'll give you a freebie, because while you were out, Gerardo, I did the podcast with Curtis Moore from Energy Fuels, and he gave us a masterclass on what they're doing with the White Mesa Mill and how they're producing the heavies, and how amid the Trump administration trying to partner with these companies, they're the only ones showing up with like actual pounds and kilograms of these heavy rare earths. They don't have to develop anything. They have developed the mill. It is producing heavies. And so, yeah, go back and listen to last week's podcast. I thought Curtis did a great job explaining all that. Couple more things just real quick. So, and this is, I'm not knocking the defense metals. I don't know a lot about the company. I just want to show you things to look for, or how to potentially evaluate a company. So they put their project up here with 2.7% and 1.4% total rare earth oxides. And they got the tonnage here, which is the total resource, obviously the rocks that contain these grades of rare earth metals. And you can see how they compare to some other projects, including Mountain Pass, which is in production. You can see it's about a third of the grade, right? I mean, this inferred resource at Mountain Pass is approaching 5%, and defense is here around 1.5 to 2%. So one thing I'd look for. And then just on the, I don't know if it's a PFS or an FS, but it's a PFS, a pre-feasibility study. It's a little skinny here on the post-tax IRR at 18%. You'd like to see a higher number, something above 25 or 30%, to give you a cushion, as Gerardo said, when things go wrong. He was talking about that in terms of the share structure, but I'm talking about it in terms of the underlying asset prices and commodity prices, if they happen to soften or whatever. Not a lot of room for error at only an 18% IRR. So whether you're evaluating this company or other companies, just things we always look for. Right? Grades, NPVs, IRRs, share structures, in addition to the team and the management, for sure.
Yep. Well said. Well said. Hopefully that answered the question. Thanks again for writing in. Please encourage you all to continue to write in. We love the whole point of this whole thing, right? To get our therapy session in and share some ideas and hopefully answer some of your questions. I know you have another few there, Nick.
One more. It's actually just one more, and then we'll do stocks and get out of here. So hello, Nick and Gerardo, or Gerardo and Nick. Question for you. He actually says Gerardo, or she, in this case, Marianne. Thanks for listening.
Marianne.
A few weeks back, you interviewed Morgan from Asukar, and it sounds like an interesting speculation, given they have drill permitted projects and a very reputable CEO at the helm. She may have meant Almadex.
Meant Asukar. I did.
Oh, did she?
I did. I did an interview as a courtesy because of Morgan and our relationship with him on Asukar and with him on Almadex as well. So we actually get
thoughts.
An Asukar interview. First off, thank you, Marianne, for writing in. Appreciate the question. Look, I've known Morgan for almost two decades now. One of the sharpest, most astute, straight shooting, honest CEOs that you'll ever meet. He's also hyper diligent when he vets projects. So when I saw that Asukar was joint venturing three projects from the sister company, Almadex Minerals, I understand the strategy there. The company has, I believe, 75 to 80 million shares outstanding. I think the last I saw was trading like at 7 cents or something silly like that. So the market cap is like a $6-7 million dollar market cap. Market cap is great. Early stage, tiny. CEO, fantastic. Share structure, relatively clean. A great speculation on, and this is my speculation on the company's direction, I think they'll continue to joint venture projects from the sister company, Almadex Minerals, for the simple fact that Almadex now has something like 24 projects in its portfolio. And actually, I interviewed Morgan earlier about Almadex and about joint venturing some of those properties. And he was pretty open about the fact that he's looking for active partners on quality projects, just projects that he doesn't have the time for. So I think Asukar will need someone to come in and run that company that has the bandwidth, because Morgan and Almadex have their hands full. If I wanted to make a bet on Asukar, which is really a bet on Morgan or a potential successor, I would hedge that bet by buying some Almadex shares, because Almadex is a lot more liquid, has $20 million in cash and gold, has over 24 projects, three or four royalties, owns 6 diamond drills and is active drilling and will be for the next, 12 months. They have a drill program they're starting here in the next couple of weeks, and you'll see consistent discovery-driven drilling here for the next 12 months. So while I'm less sure about the timeline for Asukar, I know with Almadex, you have multiple shots on goal. If you absolutely have to own some Asukar and just understand it's a lottery ticket, it's a heck of a speculation given the team and the access to the drills and now the access to projects in Nevada and the Western United States through Almadex. But I think Almadex is the real play there at this point.
Beauty. Well said. I would own some Almadex and in fact do. So there you go.
Great to be back with all of you. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 344th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. You all have yourselves a phenomenal December. We will see you next week, everybody. Take care.
See ya.